Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch all have determined that Israel is an apartheid state. This has barely been reported, but then the supporter of Israel might say, this is more ganging up against the Jews. They're being singled out.
They always do that. First of all, they do that because of their paranoia, because they have a belief. Again, it's instilled in them through Zionist ideology, but it's taught to them as children. From the David Ben-Gurion was an atheist. David Ben-Gurion, however, believed that the Bible was the most accurate historical document possible, and it should be taught in schools. So they're taught from the time they're children, in kindergarten, that there are all these enemies of the Jews. In fact, one woman I know, who's Maya Wind, you may have heard of her. Her husband is Aaron Efrati. He was one of the he was with Breaking the Silence and one of the spokespersons. Maya was with ICOD, Jeff Halper's group, the Israeli Committee Against Home Demolition. She told me, and she was one of the first female refuseniks. Anyway, she told me. Maya told me that beginning in kindergarten, when you go to school, above the blackboard are pictures of Israel's enemies, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Romans, blah, 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 the Palestinians. And they show them as all Jew haters, right? And even in 1985, a Jewish organization conducted an educational study of the schools, and they found that 80% of the children in these schools thought that Palestinians were dirty, 75% thought that all Arabs were terrorists, and 90% believed that the Palestinians had no right to Israel-Palestine at all. This is in 1985, when things were so much calmer than they are today. Things have only gotten worse since then.
Why is that?
It's because there's a reaction to the world becoming more and more aware of what Israel's doing to the Palestinian people. There's the internet, so people can see more clearly just what Israel is doing. The Arab countries have gotten more cohesive and organized and, you know, connected with each other, so they're able to, they're not real good, but they're able to, you know, promote the Palestinian cause. There's a lot of answers. And then existential fear. Existential fear continues to grow as their leaders continue to teach them that the world hates Jews. And also, the leaders of Israel since Menachem Begin have been more right-wing than left-wing. Menachem Begin came in, I think, in the mid-70s. And so the right-wing is definitely far more hysterical, let's say, or far more bigoted toward Palestinians. They don't have much generosity toward Palestinians. Netanyahu, if you read Netanyahu's writings or hear him talk from the time he was in his 20s, he really believes that Arabs are eternal enemies of the Jews and that they are subhuman, okay? And pretty much most of the Israeli prime ministers have said that. When you, and then the chiefs of staff, when you read what they say, it's just horrifying.
Among the U.S. political class, there's a strong bipartisan support for Israel, with a few exceptions. Do you see any serious erosion of the U.S. position?
More than in the past, but not enough, nowhere near enough. Like, for example, when there occasionally the House, Betty McCollum usually is the congresswoman from Minnesota who does this. She's a Democrat. Usually she'll put forward a resolution, which they'll call maybe no way to treat a child. And it says the U.S. will not give Israel any more weapons as long as they are abusing children. And the only people who ever sign on to that resolution are 100% Democrats, no Republicans. And of the Democrats, it's gotten a little bit better, but I would say 80% were people of color until recently. A couple more Caucasians have joined that. But it's nowhere near enough. 30 out of 435 House members, it's ridiculous. And almost nobody in the Senate. Bernie, a little bit Elizabeth Warren, but that's about it.
AIPAC, American Israel Public Affairs Committee, you were a member. What was that like? And does the lobby still have big influence in Washington? Recently, AIPAC helped defeat House Representatives Cori Bush and Jamal Bowman, both of whom were critics of Israel.
When AIPAC, I would get the literature every week, usually, and after about being a member for a year, and I had had my transformation, they called me up and I spoke with a woman who was a graduate student, and I said, you know what, I can't support I can't support AIPAC anymore unless they decide to make peace with Israel and they stop promoting violence against the Palestinians. And she goes, well, AIPAC only does what the Israeli government tells them to do. And I've heard that many times since. So AIPAC, in my opinion, is an arm of a foreign government. They should not be allowed to be a lobbyist group in the United States and donations to AIPAC, and AIPAC is extremely wealthy. Donations should not be tax deductible. They have so much influence in Congress. There are approximately 2 AIPAC lobbyists for every member of Congress. When a person gets elected to Congress, one of the first things is that person is meets with an AIPAC member. So Jamal Bowman and Cori Bush and obviously Rashida Tlaib and a few others have probably told these AIPAC members, go to hell. But they're so rare. And AIPAC has so much money, as proven with the defeat of Cori Bush and Jamal Bowman and Andy Levin. Andy Levin came from one of the most esteemed families in Michigan. He was a very popular congressman. He was, I think, president of a synagogue and the head of a Jewish organization. He was a Zionist, but he was a kind-hearted Zionist who recognized what Israel was doing was just really wrong, inhumane. But they defeated him. They got rid of him. They spent millions of dollars on the campaign and got rid of Andy Levin. The state of Israel, through AIPAC and other means, has such influence in the United States that I don't know if it's possible in any reasonable time frame to somehow stop that influence from its horrible effects. For example, Intel now calls itself as much an Israeli company as an American company. Israel has infiltrated Google, Microsoft, all the high-tech companies. They have, I guess, access to their core coding. They just have a lot of influence. They're influential in banks and also throughout universities, as we're seeing, because a lot of the donors are Jewish, and the donors are saying you have to stop these nonviolent protests by a lot of Jewish kids who know that what Israel is doing is not only inhumane but illegal. And they're kicking out college presidents or even trying to get rid of professors who speak out against what Israel is doing.
But you see younger Jewish Americans being more critical.
Much more. Jewish Americans under the age of 40, a majority, do not accept what Israel is doing. They're critical of Israel.
Do you see Israel on its current path in danger of becoming isolated and a pariah state?
I do. And I see it possibly even in danger of civil war. As of 2 months ago, according to a number of media sources, including Israeli sources, 550,000 Jews have left Israel. At least 80% have said they will not return. Hundreds of businesses have closed. Many businesses are going bankrupt. And the concentration of the religious fanatics in Israel is much higher today than it was 11 months ago. And that continues to happen because not that many Jews are going to want to move to Israel because they're worried for their safety. But the religious Jews who think that it's their holy land and they need to be there, they're the ones who are going to move there. And so that population will keep expanding. And of course, they have a much higher birth rate than the non-Orthodox Jews in Israel. So who knows? I think it'll be long. Like Ilan Pappe and a number of people think that Israel is going to really implode. If they do, I think it'll take a lot longer than Elon and some of the others are predicting it will take.
Norway, Ireland, and Spain in late May recognized Palestine. The General Assembly votes in the UN on admitting Palestine are literally laughable. I mean, the votes are like 160-10, 170-8, those small numbers being the U.S., Israel, and some powerful Pacific Island nations.
Marshall Islands, Palau, Nauru. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you see happening there internationally with more and more countries like Colombia, like Brazil, speaking out against what Israel is doing to the Palestinians?
I think it's good, but unless the United States gets involved, I don't think that any of these countries will really be able to get Israel to change its behavior. The United States, which they could have done years ago, has to demand that Israel stop and end all illegal activity and all violations of international law. But that would mean ending the occupation, and Israel wants the land. They're not occupying the Palestinian people for security reasons. If they really wanted security, they would have accepted they would have accepted numerous peace plans beginning in 1948, but they would have at least accepted the Arab Peace Initiative that has been on the table since 2002, would provide security guarantees for every state in the region, would provide Israel with diplomatic relations with every one of the 57 Muslim nations on earth, and would create a peace on the 1967 border, but that's negotiable. Even the former head of Mossad, he said, look, if Israel would give the Palestinians 97% of the West Bank, allow a nominal number between 20 and 30,000 Palestinians to return to Israel proper, and give Palestinians their civil rights, they could make peace. But Israel wants the land. They've been willing to sacrifice Jews in favor of the land. They've always been willing to sacrifice Jews. They've always wanted the land. They originally wanted a greater Israel, which was Syria, most of Lebanon, Jordan, Transjordan at the time, and all of Palestine. That was their goal. And Russia and the United States in the 1950s, when Ben-Gurion started talking about this, almost kicked Israel out of the United Nations. But then Ben-Gurion, you know, modified his language.
Talk about two young Americans. In February, Aaron Bushnell, a 25-year-old Air Force serviceman, immolated himself in front of the Israeli embassy in Washington. His last words were, "Free Palestine." And then in early September, Ayşenur Egi, a 26-year-old Turkish-American woman, was shot and killed by the Israeli military while at a peaceful protest in the village of Beta near Nablus in the occupied West Bank. Her death reminded some of another young American woman, peace activist Rachel Corrie, who was crushed to death by an Israeli bulldozer in Gaza in 2003. Again, there's been no accountability for that.
Not only has there been no accountability, the Israeli courts exonerated the bulldozer driver, even though he saw her and deliberately drove over her. And then when the Corrie sued the state of Israel, the judge threw their lawsuit out also. And the reasoning was she was not an Israeli soldier, therefore she's an enemy combatant. That was basically the reason why the driver, the bulldozer driver, was exonerated.
A handful of U.S. government workers have resigned in protest of Washington's support of Israel and its Gaza war. Why haven't there been more resignations and protests? What's happening in Gaza and the West Bank is happening in broad daylight, in plain sight.
There's a couple reasons. Number one is Israel's narrative has been around for decades, generations, right? It has infiltrated the minds of most of Americans, whereas the Arab, what the Israelis call Arab, you know, because they don't refer to Palestinians as Palestinians, they don't want to acknowledge their identity, so they lump them into one category. But with 9/11, for example, and ISIS and Al-Qaeda, the Arabs have really gotten a very, very bad reputation. And some of it is deserved, but the fact is that a much lower percentage of Muslims support terrorism than Jews or Christians. The Gallup organization did a poll, and they found out that Christians and Jews support, in certain situations, terrorist acts at about double the rate of Muslims. But there's a billion, what is there? There's almost 2 billion Muslims in the world. So it only takes 1% to have, 200,000 terrorists. My point is that the Israeli narrative has infiltrated society to such an extent for so long that a lot of people simply take things for granted. When you hear Biden or Joe Scarborough or a lot of people talk about the Israelis and the Palestinians, they just automatically talk about Palestinians like they're terrorists, like it's just common knowledge, like that's who they are. They have never studied the history. They haven't had the decency to study the history and find out what really is going on.
What's happening mostly under the radar in the occupied West Bank? Since October 7th, there are close to 700 Palestinian dead, many more wounded, and thousands in prisons where, according to a documented B'Tselem report, there is torture. Incidentally, the BBC recently had a report on Israeli settler violence against Palestinians in the West Bank.
Oh, it's horrible, horrible what they're doing. Under Ben-Gavir has the torture sessions from the worst of the prisons. He has them live stream video to his house so he can watch. They ordered the prisons to virtually starve them to death, to dehydrate them to death, to keep them chained 24 hours a day, no sunlight, and they're committing psychological and physical torture to these people. A lot of the prisoners have had their shackles so tight that and the Israeli guards wouldn't remove them that they had to have limbs amputated. This is their revenge. Israel is seeking vengeance. They want vengeance on the Palestinians for what they did on October 7th, for what the Amalekites did on October 7th. So they think it's justified. I'll give you an example of how psychotic this view is. And, you know, and I'm not anti-Israeli. And I'm not pro-Palestinian. I'm pro-human rights and anti-oppression. But to give you an example, there was a book written a number of years ago by two Orthodox rabbis called The King's Torah. And it was very popular in Israel. But when some of the secular organizations in Israel got angry at what it said, they were defended by a whole lot of other rabbis. What it said was that there's a term in Judaism called Yetzirah, which is the evil inclination. And Yetzirah is the good inclination. And all human beings are born with Yetzirah and Yetzirah. So according to the King's Torah, it is an act of compassion to kill Palestinian infants because they will grow up to be terrorists. And by killing them, you are ridding them of their Yetzirah, their evil inclination. This is how twisted some of these people have gotten. And these people are getting to be the mainstream of Israeli society. Ben-Gavir and Smotrich basically represent these people. And I just want to point out, one of the reasons Netanyahu, not that he wants to, but Netanyahu cannot create a ceasefire, cannot go along with a ceasefire if he wants to remain prime minister. Netanyahu's ideology is very similar to Ben-Gavir and Smotrich. It's just that they're religious and Netanyahu is not. But Netanyahu basically agrees with everything they want to do, which is expel through murder or population transfer, expel the indigenous people. And they would prefer murder. They would prefer murder because a dead Palestinian cannot commit a crime like was committed on October 7th.
The U.S. is an imperial power. It has military bases all over the Middle East. Washington is in bed with autocrats like Sisi in Egypt, monarchs in Jordan, emirs and sheikhs in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates. How does Israel figure in U.S. military calculations in the region?
If the United States is committed, has an ironclad commitment to Israel, to make sure that Israel maintains its existence and is able to defend itself against foreign invaders, the United States is always going to make sure that its best friend in the Middle East is able to maintain hegemony in the Middle East. And that's one of the reasons why the United States is so antagonistic to Iran. The United States could speak more with Iran. You know, George Bush ignored the president of Iran, who was willing to make a treaty with the United States. The Iranians were willing to create a nuclear-free Middle East, right? Of course, a nuclear-free Middle East means that Israel would have to give up its weapons because Israel is the only nuclear power in the Middle East. But my point is that the Iranians are willing to engage with Israel and with the Americans. Ehud Barak, the former defense minister, former prime minister, said, they're not irrational. They're meshuganas, but they're not irrational. Meshugan is the Yiddish word for crazy. So he considers them crazy, but he admits that they're not irrational.
What steps can be taken to alleviate or to address the roots of the conflict?
That's a very interesting question, because normally I would say education is absolutely necessary. We have to educate Americans, and somehow you got to get the education to start teaching Israelis not just the roots of the problem, but the fact that we all share a common humanity. So education doesn't work. Okay, there have been probably thousands of studies that show that if you take someone with strongly held beliefs and you show them irrefutable evidence that their beliefs are wrong, they embrace their beliefs more tenaciously. Okay, it doesn't affect them at all. So the two things that I think should be taught in school But again, Israel would rebel against this because the parents wouldn't want to go for it, are nonviolent communication, the work of Marshall Rosenberg, and the work of Byron Katie. Those things teach people to be responsible for their feelings, that no one else is responsible for their fear, no one else is responsible for their anger. And they teach, and in Byron Katie's case in particular, they teach projection. They teach how you are seeing the world as a projection. What you claim is true of someone else is often true of yourself. And these spiritual practices, because that's what they really are when you really get into them, these spiritual practices really need to change the consciousness of our society. Otherwise, we're going to destroy ourselves. Even leaving Israel aside, we're going to destroy ourselves if we don't learn to live together and learn to take responsibility for our beliefs and images and learn that, yes, you're a Jew, you're a Christian, you're a Muslim, you're a Hindu, whatever, but at heart, there is no separation and you are a human being who happens to have been born into a Jewish, Christian, Hindu, you know, Muslim family. We all share a common humanity. I want to mention one of the principles I discovered, which is that the root of suffering is the attachment to a presumed, limited, and mortal identity and to the beliefs and images that emanate from and reinforce that presumption. If someone were to take that definition and apply it to every situation where they see conflict, they would be able to understand what is going on to a far greater degree. And then a corollary to that is that the real enemy is not someone or something outside of us. The real enemy is the unexamined and dualistic mind that unconsciously projects its suffering onto the other and then blames and scapegoats the other for its suffering. That's what we're doing all the time. Yes, some people are more cruel and vicious and dishonest and unconscious than others. In fact, to a very large extent, the battle between what some people will call pro-Palestinians and pro-Israelis is a battle between consciousness and unconsciousness. My friends, my relatives who still support Israel and everybody else I met, they want to remain unconscious. They will not read a book. They want to believe the myths that they were fed. They want to believe the false ideas that they have created in their own minds rather than challenge who they think they are. And the reason they won't challenge who they think they are is, at a deeper level, it's death. They're challenging the mortality. So their identity is so extremely tied with Israel that when you criticize Israel, it's as if you're criticizing them. If Israel is unfair and inhumane, they're unfair and inhumane. And all that it takes is to just wake up and read a book. I've told my friends, why don't you read a book? No one has to know you're reading the book. You can read the book in the comfort of your own home. And you can put the book down whenever you feel like it. And they won't do it. They won't even read my book. Not only will they not read my book, but they know that I've studied the subject for thousands of hours. But they think they know more than me, even though they haven't studied it for more than a minute. This is the dilemma. This is not an exaggeration. These people, I'm not just talking about my friends, I'm talking about everybody, practically. When we talk about Israel and Palestine, yes, the so-called pro-Israel side, they don't know what they're talking about. They cling to myths. They refuse to find the history. I've never met anyone who supports Israel who actually has read the history, who really studies the history, other than a couple historians like Benny Morris, who believes that Palestinians are serial killers and psychopaths. But so it's like the KKK. They're willing to admit they hate Jews and Catholics and African Americans. And by the way, Tamir Pardo, the former head of Mossad, has called today's Israeli government much worse than the KKK. So it's a huge dilemma, and it's an existential threat to the world. It's, you know, as I say, existential fear and confusion is the main disposition of human beings, but the irony is that the unexamined and dualistic mind is self-destructive in nature. It will create, being dualistic, it will create the opposite condition to which it claims than which it claims it wants. This is why these spiritual practices are necessary. And it doesn't have to be Byron Katie and NVC. There are many other wonderful spiritual practices from religions, mostly from the East, in my opinion, but people need to embrace a spiritual practice and start learning about their own minds.
Thanks very much for your
time. Thank you, David.
You were just listening to Richard Florer, Blaming the Victim, Roots of the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict. I talked with him in mid-September at the Boulder Public Library. Richard Florer is a former member of AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. He's the author of the New York Big Book Award, Wake Up and Reclaim Your Humanity, on the tragedy of Israel-Palestine. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We're an independent nonprofit in our 39th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Noura Ereket, Ilan Pape, Chris Hedges, and Arundhati Roy. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Richard Florer, Blaming the Victim, Roots of the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict, and for his award-winning book, Wake Up and Reclaim Your Humanity, on the Tragedy of Israel-Palestine, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. PDFs and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Special thanks to Mary Fitzgerald and to the Boulder Public Library. Joe Rich is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening. We go out with the Kronos Quartet with Hamza al-Din performing Water Wheel. Thank you.
Do you like music or do you like technology? Or do you like talking to people? CGSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CGSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show and tons more. To find out more information, visit cgsf.ca.
This is CGSF